Good morning, everyone. So it's START Act 2 with the ratification yesterday of the START Treaty.
Yeah.
It was a cliffhanger as of last weekend. It seemed like it might be held up until the early next year.
Right. And here it is.
No, and it passed by a comfortable majority. But what does it mean? Yesterday we were reminding you the details of the kinds of weapons that the START Treaty actually deals with. Hans Blix joins us this morning. He served as Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, from 1981 to 1997, before he was tapped to lead the UN committee charged with searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Hans Blix, thanks for coming back to the program.
Good morning.
And happy holidays to you. I'm here with Majora Carter, who's in for Celeste Headlee for the next couple of days.
Hello, Hans.
Hello.
So, Inspector, what do you begin to inspect now of the regime of inspection for superpowers like the U.S. and Russia in this sort of START regime is actually spelled out in the treaty? How does this kind of inspection differ from the work that you did with the IAEA?
It's entirely bilateral. It's Russian inspectors coming to the U.S. and U.S. inspectors coming to Russia, and the IAEA does not peek into it at all. There was an attempt when I was still at the IA, when Hazel O'Leary was the Secretary of Energy, to allow the International Atomic Energy Agency to inspect the quantities of plutonium and enriched uranium that they were discarding both in Russia and the United States. But that has not yet borne fruit. But this, the START agreement, of course, is a real continuation of the one that was concluded in the early 90s.
You know, I learned yesterday that, in fact, the START treaties in neither case actually stipulate that warheads be dismantled, that all it really stipulates is that they be detached from whatever delivery system they're in, and that's how they're counted. We understand that there is some warhead dismantling going on, but, you know, have you ever seen a warhead be dismantled? Do they have instructions for how to do that?
No, it's not really the function of the IAEA. The IAEA's inspection is a very important one, but it verifies that there is nothing leaking out from the peaceful nuclear industry to military purposes. So the IAEA is never watching the dismantling of a weapon.
But once you dismantle weapons, and you referred to it in your discussion with Hazel O'Leary about discarded plutonium, suddenly you've got rooms full of discarded plutonium from dismantled weapons. How do you discard plutonium, for heaven's sakes, without creating an even more enticing target for terrorists?
Well, it's a bit of a problem. The best way is to do away with it. And actually, plutonium is mixed with uranium, and you get something called MOX, mixed oxide fuel, that can be burnt in regular light water reactors. So that's how you consume some of it. You can also consume the plutonium by putting it in breeder reactors, and the Russians do that. But it is a problem. There is too much of purified plutonium lying around in the world, in Russia and the U.S. and in Japan.
Is START going to have any effect on the new nukes in India or North Korea?
Well, there is a sort of moral argument. I think that so long as the Russians and the Americans are keeping their enormous quantities, that it is not exactly a break on India and others to go down. I think that the U.S. stands better now to tell everybody that, look, we think you Iranians or North Koreans that you should hold back, and we too should hold back. But I don't think it's going to be an overwhelming argument, neither on the Iranians and North Koreans. But it is helpful.
You know, the prospect as the post-Cold War dismantling of nuclear arsenals, assuming that it accelerates, raises the prospect of something I referred to at the top of the hour, and that is a kind of 21st century nuclear tag sale, where some of this material would actually make its way into a kind of international aftermarket for nuclear materials, either for the construction of dirty bombs or actual reassembly of warheads. Do you worry about that? And does the IAEA have a role in preventing Cold War era from legitimate nuclear powers from becoming a source for this aftermarket?
Yes, I think we have to pay close attention to it, but I wouldn't say I worry about it. It began with the dissolution of the Soviet Union when there was much less control in Russia at the time. And then things were leaking out and there were lots of scams. They were selling so-called red mercury, small quantities of uranium or plutonium, very small quantities. And this was sold to various scoundrels around the world. So there was trafficking. And there's still a certain amount of that, but we have had now over 15 years of sharpening the controls at the borders and inside the countries. So, it, yes, you need to pay attention to it, but I think it is a lesser problem. Maybe there are more terrorists out there, but there are not so many of them. I think you could make use of these tiny quantities.
And are we to be and thinking in terms of people just sort of sitting around who are non-technical on these matters? Is that because we've increased our vigilance on observing the kinds of materials that will you know, possibly become of interest to terrorists? Or can we actually track this material because it is radioactive and because it is so unusual?
Yeah, very often they can track it. Radioactive materials make the great footprints, so it's easier to track than some chemical materials. But what one more practically should worry about, I think, are the so-called dirty bombs. The dirty bombs don't have an explosion like a fission bomb, but they spread radioactive material. If you get hold of, say, you don't need plutonium, you could have cobalt or cesium or some other material, and you put it in a shell and explode it and put it off in some busy place in the world, and that will have a great terror effect. That would be much less difficult to do than actually putting together a nuclear bomb.
Just going to change the subject before we go, thinking in terms of the holidays. Your holiday plans all settled, Hans Blix?
Yep.
I'm wondering, you know, one of the things we're doing as kind of a public service this morning is advising people who worry about their family reunion table political discussions kind of ruining the dinner. You know about this?
Yeah.
I'm thinking back in like 2002, right when the whole controversy over whether the Iraq has nuclear weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
You must have had to been a pretty quiet fellow there at the family reunion Christmas table. Am I wrong about that?
No, I was alone in New York at the time. My family was in Stockholm, but fortunately, telephone calls are very cheap though these days, so that was easy.
Do you have any advice for people if you're in the middle of a political firestorm, how to keep from becoming the center of a giant argument on the family holiday table?
Well, sometimes I'm asked, what does it take to do diplomacy? And I'm also usually saying that, look, you can start in the kitchen with your wife, with your children. And above all, I would say the long experience that told me, never humiliate anybody.
All right. Good advice from Hans Blix.
Excellent advice. Served
as Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency from 1981 to 1997. He led the UN committee charged with searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Happy holidays, Hans Blix.
You too. Bye-bye.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.